Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is presented by Dirt Candy and Shoebox.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Amanda Dell, and you are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair, broadcasting from Heritage Radio Network in a shipping container at Roberta's Pizza. I am finally, finally joined by my work wife, Kimberly Chow.
What's up, Internet? I'm back.
She's finally back in Nueva York. I could not be more excited. Can't wait to hear what she's been up to.
We can't afford to the rights to reunite it, and it feels so good. So maybe DJ Dave
you
will
can
sing it.
Over. I see what you had in mind.
I was trying to kick it over to you. But instead, I'm going to say I'm really happy to be back. Spent a lot of time reading on planes, in cars, while solo dining, so we got a lot to catch up on in terms of what I have been and what Amanda has been reading, watching, and listening to.
Can't wait. A little bit later in the show, after we get into that, we are going to be joined by our very good friend, Naz Riahi. She is the founder of Bitten, a food conversation. It's a pretty amazing, I don't even know if I would call it a conference. We kind of have, it's been referred to as the TED Talks of food. She is going to be able to give us a little preview about what's going to happen at Bitten this year. It's October 27th. Don't show up on the 28th. Okay, it's October 27th. It will be in Manhattan, New York. And
I've heard of that.
Cool. She will be joining us a little bit later in the show to, again, give us a preview, tell us what else Bitten does. And, you know, talk about also what she's reading, watching, or listening to. And also, our very own Kim will be giving her own talk at Bitten. So maybe we will get a very exclusive listen at some of the topics she's going to be talking about.
Exactly.
Cool.
But first, Amanda, what have you been reading, watching, and listening to?
Oh my gosh, I've missed hearing you say that.
You just say it to yourself in the booth.
I pretty much do. Well, I'm excited to be back in New York because I was away for the weekend in Cold Spring, New York, in the middle Hudson Valley. And we were doing a signing with Kalu Henry there. She wrote a book called Back Pocket Pasta. It's kind of like a go-to guide to how you can kind of make some pasta dishes for yourself on the fly. She's a Hudson, New York-based author. And our friends at the Cold Spring General Store hosted a really beautiful signing for her book. And it was great to kind of take Food Book Fair signings on the road. So that was really fun and really exciting to get out of the city. I stopped at Storm King, which I had never been to.
Oh, awesome. Storm King's the best.
Yes. Took a trolley and frolicked in all the sculptures. I really like the Marc de Souvreaux. We had one at our college.
I got some feelings about it. I also had one at my college. I think every college has. Mark, are you? I hope
Mark,
he's not listening
you
to
have
us.
A good thing going over there. It was just... I mean, I had a lot of other favorites, too. It's just
Vermilion's
like
one of my favorite colors.
For whatever reason, it's just me because it's just looking at one of his sculptures every day at school and then seeing other ones. You're like, oh, I get you.
Yeah.
So the signing was also co-presented by Edible Hudson Valley. And one of the best things I've read over the past couple of days has been their fall issue. I really was impressed by it. It had some rad illustrations from Libby Vanderpug, who we've worked with at Food Book Fair.
Love you, Libby.
Yeah. And she illustrated all different taps from local breweries. So I really liked that feature.
You mean the tap handle?
Yeah. Yeah. And talked cool. about each brewery. And there's some really, really beautiful photography by a woman named Dana Matthews. And she has been photographing Lucky Dog Organic Farm for over 10 years. And then some of these photographs and the additional stories surrounding the photos were published in this fall edition of Edible Hudson Valley.
I've seen some of those photos before. I know the folks at Lucky Dog from my Western Catskills hangout days. And you can see them in the farmers markets in Fort Greene and Union Square, and they grow delicious food.
Yeah, really
But those
stunning.
Photos have showed up like over different points of time in the period of time she's been shooting them on different websites, other publications. So it's cool to see that still continuing.
Yeah, and kind of a little capsule collection of those photos. So I really enjoyed this issue. It's the Edible Hudson Valley Fall 2017. So pick it up if you see it around.
Cool.
Yeah. So Kim, what have you been reading, watching, or listening to in your travels?
I've been in mostly Oaxaca City for the last couple weeks, 2.5 weeks, and spending a lot of time reading, researching, actively dispelling white supremacy from my bod. And while decolonizing myself, I've been doing a lot of reading while solo dining and eating soup specifically and pozole. I've turned into sort of a pozole pusher on other people since I've come back. But I read Freedom is a Constant Struggle by Angela Davis, which is a series of recent collected essays and speeches that she's given connecting movements, justice movements around the globe over recent history, from apartheid in South Africa to the struggle for independence in Palestine to Ferguson and Black Lives Matter, and just sort of keeping that in mind while thinking of the larger picture as we try to make this world more good and beautiful and kind, considering all of the shitstorms that have been happening lately. That she says, you don't have to be an expert to get involved, and you don't have to be an expert to support something that you care about and that you know is important. And we have a book signing this weekend at Union Square Green Market, sort of in support of the movement as well, for a new book called Feed the Resistance, which is a collection of recipes and ideas for getting involved.
And today is actually the published date for that book.
Which is really exciting.
So happy
pub day to Julia Tershin and all the contributors in this book. A lot of people we know, Shaq Simley, Caleb Zegas, Brian Terry, have contributed to this. Different recipes, but also essays, recommendations, resources for getting involved in whatever way you can, whenever you can. And some of the recipes are also really delicious.
Amazing.
And inspired by things you can make to fuel yourself, to fuel large groups of people as well, and things that people have been making through other movements in time.
Amazing. So you can catch Julia and maybe a few NYC contributors will hopefully stop by our Food Book Fair signing tent at the Union Square Green Market. We're there every Saturday from 10 to 12. And we're really excited to host a signing for Feed the Resistance and for Julia.
Yeah. And I'm also want to give a shout out to, I finally, so many people in my life listen to podcasts on a regular, including Nas here and Amanda.
Yes.
And I finally got into Still Processing.
Ugh, what took you so long?
It took
long?
Me, I don't know, walking around in a different country. I don't know. I walk around here all the time too, but it just didn't, it wasn't clicking for me. So I've been listening to back episodes of Still Processing.
Are you caught up?
With Jenna Wortham and Wesley Morris. I'm not caught up,
okay.
But I'm close.
Okay.
I've been listening to a lot of the episodes that have to do with who gets to tell their own story, who gets to tell our stories, especially as people of color, for them, especially as Black writers. I've been listening to also along those lines, and this is sort of connected to what I'm doing at Bidden, which we'll talk about in a little bit. I've been listening to Racist Sandwich, which is a great podcast out of Columbus, Puerto Vallarta, and Portland, Oregon. Hmm. There are different, the different co-hosts all are based somewhere else, but they all started in Portland, and that's an awesome one about food, race, gender, and class, and the intersections there.
Racist Sandwich.
Racist Sandwich.
Okay, I need to, I will put that in my queue.
Yeah, you should.
Thanks, Kim.
This is finally when I get to recommend a podcast to you, like 2 years later.
Kim is fully living out our title, Recommended Reading. We don't just recommend reading. We also recommend podcasts, films, anything that's media related. So you can always feel free to tweet at us or send us a message on Instagram at Food Book Fair. Let us know what you want us to recommend and what we should try reading. We're going to take a short break unless Kim has...
I have lots of recommendations, but I think I need to save some for later.
Let's save some. We are going to take a short break and throw it to one of our sponsors that helps support all of Heritage Radio Network and independent radio, which so it's super important. Definitely check out heritageradionetwork.org, and you can find out how to become a member and support our show and others. And we will be back very shortly with Naz Riahi of Bitten, a food conversation.
This episode is presented by Dirt Candy, the award-winning vegetable restaurant on New York City's Lower East Side. Dirt Candy was the first vegetable-focused restaurant in the city and the leader of the vegetable-forward movement. Its new location opened in January 2015, and it was the first restaurant in the city to eliminate tipping and share profits with its employees. Dirt Candy. Anyone can cook a hamburger. Leave the vegetables to the professionals. Learn more at dirtcandynyc.com. This episode is also presented by Shoebox. In French, shoe, that's spelled C-H-O-U-X, means cabbage, something we could all use more of. Shoebox is the restaurant industry's first web-based point-of-purchase service that helps everyone organize their paperwork, understand their purchases, and save time every step of the way. 86 your invoice insanity with Shoebox. Learn more at C-H-O-U-X-B-O-X.com.
Welcome back. This is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. I'm Amanda Dell.
And I'm Kimberly Chow. And we are so happy to be joined today with our dear friend and comrade and the founder and creative director of Bidden, Naz Riahi.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, Naz.
Hi, guys. I'm so excited to be here. I like that clapping situation.
We just tried to make a show every episode that prompts as many keyboard sound effects from our engineer as possible.
I think that's a good one.
Shout out to David Tatasciore, our engineer, making things possible here.
The clapping again.
What a great audience.
Well, Naz, we're excited to get into talking about Bitten, but we also want to know what you're watching, reading, or listening to. So
listen,
let us know what's on your nightstand.
Oh my God, so much. I have to say, the first 10 minutes of this show, it's so hard to be a guest because I kept wanting to interrupt and say
things. Here's your time.
You
just had to wait 10 minutes.
It took so much self-restraint. I played a casual game while you guys were talking.
Wow. You're never coming back on this show.
Oh my goodness. So many podcasts, so many books. I've been really trying to read mostly books by women this year, both fiction and nonfiction, with a few books by men thrown in there. Right now I just finished Eve Babbitt's Eve's Hollywood, which was exquisite in so many ways and so funny and so, just bold in a way that I didn't expect. And I actually didn't like it when I first started it. So it took a few chapters. And then I just started Hillary Clinton's book, which I'm very excited about. What happened?
What happened?
So what happened?
What happened?
What happened?
We need to read the book.
There's no punctuation in the
title.
There's
no punctuation.
Okay, just making sure.
She wants to leave it open to interpretation, I guess. Give you freedom to punctuate as you please. I also, let's see. So I feel like I need to talk about one of my favorite podcasts, aside from this one, this radio show, which is, I've been trying to get people to listen to this for like a year and no one does. And
it?
I think everyone thinks I'm a total creep.
Okay, the suspense is building.
All right. It's called My Dad Wrote a Porno.
Okay.
Oh, I've heard of this, but it's
probably
not actually
from me. You've probably heard about it. Exactly.
We're with you. Keep going.
So it's literally the funniest thing I have heard in forever. And right now, with all the shit happening in the world, trust me, you can use a little My Dad Wrote a Porno. It's a podcast of three British friends, one of whom his dad retired. He was in the sales business and then decided to write an erotic novel series called Belinda Blinked. And it is so funny. So they do a live reading and then analysis of the book in the podcast. Trust me, you're not going to regret it. You're going to be on the floor,
so it's
roaring.
It's still going.
So it's been three seasons now. And
how long is this porno?
Yeah, how long is it? Wait, it's a porno book. It's an erotic
novel.
Okay,
it's an erotic novel, and it's got three books now in the series.
Wow. Okay.
And he's working on the fourth.
So
I think
he's like going Harry Potter style.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yes. But the funny thing is, the books don't really have a proper ending. None of the books or a proper beginning. The first book ends, and then the second book literally opens where the first book ended. So there's no reason for it to be a second book. It could just continue on being the continuation of the first
book.
But
how long is each book?
I mean, I haven't ordered the physical book. I probably should because I'm such a fan. But the podcast is about, I think, 20 episodes, but they also have a lot of celebrities in between episodes come and talk about their favorite things about the series. And actually, the woman co-host, her name's Alice, I believe. I forget her last name. Is a really notable chef and recipe book writer. What are those called?
Cookbook authors.
Cookbook author. And food stylist.
Amanda's look, she just like turned her head away and kind of like mumbled cookbook author into the microphone just now.
Dave,
good.
Don't be alarmed. We will be ordering the entire series of those books to here at Heritage so we can fully enjoy them during our next podcast.
Oh,
so just
God.
Please put them in our mail pile.
Thank
you.
Entirely. I mean, there's exposition. And do
it
they
is,
only read the sexy parts?
No,
or?
They read the whole thing. It is about a saleswoman in the pots and pans industry who will stop at nothing to close a deal.
Whoa.
Wow.
This is totally appropriate for this show.
I can't. Okay, so again, the name of the podcast is
My Dad Wrote a Porno.
My Dad Wrote a Porno. It's on iTunes. Or,
yes, you can find it.
Okay. You can find it. Just search iTunes for My Dad Wrote a Porno.
So,
I wonder what you get if you search. I mean, it's fairly well known now, but I wonder what you,
well known, yeah.
you get when you search My Dad Wrote a Porno on Google.
Yeah. I think you get the show. I bet you get the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the dad's pen name is Rocky Flintstone.
Okay. Descriptive yet.
And he likes to write.
Mysterious.
He likes to write on the beach while drinking a glass of white wine.
Wow. You've painted such a beautiful picture for us. I can't wait to go home and download this. Actually, I don't know if I'll download. I might just,
listen,
you know, write.
Listen to a few episodes and see how it goes. So today I've been listening to a lot of Tom Petty and Yesterday, and I am reminded of the fact that when I moved here, it was to the U.S. from Iran. It was around the time, I think it was the early 90s. I moved in 1990. And it was the Free Falling video had just come out.
Oh,
and
I remember that.
Oh, my God. Not only was it just beautiful in this very romantic, cool way, especially for a child who's not American, but I thought that was what it meant to be American. Like, I would grow up and there would be motels and pools. And, like, I didn't understand the drug parts of it and that stuff because I was a kid, but
I heard, is he still alive?
No, it's real. He died today. Yeah.
Fuck.
Yesterday he actually passed away.
Spreading conspiracy rumors, but we have actually confirmed that he is in fact deceased. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Thank you for your beautiful music, Tom.
Yeah. And then I'm listening to a lot of Lizzo and also the new Saint Vincent, which the full album's not out yet, but the singles are on repeat. And I like just have been so stressed with Bitten, but take breaks occasionally to dance around my apartment listening to Lizzo mostly.
Do you listen while you work? Like while you send emails?
No, I can't. Okay. I can't.
But you take breaks to insert art and culture and
yes. I take a lot of walks with my dog, and everybody, I think I've become...
Hashtag Hugo Terrier.
Yes.
Those who know or don't know, now you know.
I've become the weirdo in the neighborhood who just walks. And I walk like 4 to 5 miles a day. And so that's when I listen to music and podcasts and also books on tape for the first time. I listened to Bruce Springsteen's memoir because he reads it.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. I always like when, it always seems strange to me when someone who's still living does not read their own memoir.
Yeah.
Though I guess if I had the choice of picking an actor who had a great voice or something who wasn't me to read it, maybe I would do that.
My jury's out on books on tape.
This was the first for me.
Okay, well.
I didn't know you were a Bruce Springsteen fan.
Oh, I love Bruce. I love Bruce so much.
So American of you.
I know. So like, yeah. The memoir was amazing. He talks a lot about his struggles with depression, and it's very vulnerable and very open in a way that maybe I didn't expect from someone like him. And he talks a lot about racism, and it's really, really incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, going back to Tom Petty and listening to him when you first arrived in the U.S., maybe for our listeners, it would be they would love to hear about kind of how you got here and what your background story is and how you came to found Bitten.
Oh, that's like my whole life. You want
a shorter version of that in less than 5 minutes.
Well, when I was 10, my mother and I immigrated to the U.S. as political refugees. And it was, I think it's an especially poignant conversation right now because people, not a lot of people, but many people have this perspective that everyone wants to come to the U.S. because the U.S. is this amazing, great, incredible place. And certainly there are some people who want to come here, but most people who come here don't come because they have a choice. They come because they have to. They're either escaping something or they are seeking a better life because their circumstances in their home countries are so terrible. Obviously, with the refugee crisis, we see that amplified, especially because of social media. So when I came, I didn't want to be here. My mother didn't want to be here. I missed my family. She missed her country. I didn't speak any English. I didn't know the customs and the culture. It was really one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life, but it absolutely contributed to who I am today because I had to grow a really, really thick skin in order to survive. And that's sometimes been a positive thing in my life and often actually been a really negative thing in my life.
Mm. I've heard you speak so eloquently about this and about your experiences as an immigrant, especially at that young age, whether in your own writing, including a piece you published on Medium that Barack Obama shared.
He publicly responded to it, and then they put it on his Medium page.
Which is pretty amazing. And then also, you've told some of your story in interview form with Dana Cowan, who's another speaker at Bitten this year, who has a show, Speaking Broadly, on HRN. So two very different but awesome ways to tell your story, but also in other forms of media as well. And I am just wondering how in the time, especially over the last couple of years, as storylines, narratives, and how people perceive the refugee crisis, immigrant movement to America and around the world over the last few years, how has telling your story or sharing your story, how have you changed that at all? Or have people reacted differently to it?
I don't know, actually, what the result of telling my story has been. I haven't had the opportunity to share it as broadly as I would like. I think you guys both know I recently wrote a collection of essays that I'm in the process of revising, and that's going to go a lot deeper into the story and the experience, and I'm hoping that once that's published, it will have an effect, whether it's a dialogue or it's a change of mind and hearts, I don't know. I certainly hope to leave this world a little bit better, and I think that would be a way to make it better, but who knows? I've also realized it's not my responsibility to change other people's minds, and I think Amanda always says this to me. It's true. It's true, though. I can tell my story, and if someone wants to engage me in a conversation about it, I'm happy to engage, but it's not my responsibility to prove anything about myself or about the immigrant experience or convince anyone that immigrants are good people.
You settled in Seattle when you first came to the U.S.
Yes, Bellevue, suburb of Seattle.
Okay. And then you have spent time in Los Angeles. And then do you consider New York home?
I do. I came to New York when I was 22 or 23. I'd never really been here. I'd been here once for 2 or 3 days, a few months before I moved here. And when I got off the plane, I felt like I was home in a way I hadn't felt since the night I left my home in Iran and got on the airplane and came to the U.S. I just felt like I fit in a way that I had never felt like I fit in before.
Wow.
And it felt right.
What do you think contributed to that?
I don't know. I think it's maybe the architecture of some of the spaces was reminiscent. I think the fact that there is so much diversity, I think the fact that there are so many people who are away from home here, whether they're American and live in the U.S. or not. Most of my friends here have built a family around friendship because their families are not in New York City. And I think that definitely also has contributed to it.
Wow. So you're here to stay for a while.
You know, the one thing I've learned in my life is you literally never know what's going to happen. When I lived in LA, in the middle of all of this, I moved to LA for a few years and it never quite felt right. But you know, one of my ambitions is to be a screenwriter. And I know that if I professionally want to do that, I will eventually probably have to move to LA even for a little while. I know that I'll always have a home in New York and I'll always come back to it.
Yeah, Hugo loves New York. Hugo, hashtag Hugo the Terrier.
Hugo Terrier.
Okay.
Hugo Terrier.
Not the Terrier, just Hugo Terrier.
I don't know who's got that other hashtag. My dad made a porno. But, well, we can't wait for this book of essays to be shared more widely, knock wood, and for you to become a screenwriter and also share stories that way more widely, knock wood again. But we'd love to talk about what you have coming up immediately, yeah. Which is why we're here.
Yeah, Bitten, a food conversation, October 27th, coming up. You can check out all of Bitten's handles at This Is Bitten for more info and tickets and a list of the speakers.
You can also go to thisisbitten.com.
That too.
Okay, so why don't I tell you about
just
Bitten?
Get into it.
Bitten, this is the fifth iteration of Bitten in 3 years. It's a startup that I founded 3 years ago and I'm so incredibly proud of. The platform is, positioning food as a pillar of pop culture, which is something no one else talks about, and I'm hoping to coin. You heard it here first, folks. So it's really
another
all about
recommended reading exclusive. David,
where are you?
Air horn. Okay, continue. Okay, there we go.
So it's all about food through the lens of creativity, innovation, mm-hmm. technology, art, trends. And the idea is to bring people who work in the food space and people who don't work in the food space who are interested in these other, other areas, pop culture, technology, innovation, entrepreneurship, art, so on and so forth, together for a day to be inspired by the stories of our speakers and to ideally connect with each other. I'm hoping that the conference sparks ideas for people. It brings people together to collaborate. I really feel like there's something powerful about stepping away from your desk for a day and going into a space that you don't normally go to and listening to people's stories and connect, sitting next to someone that you don't know.
Word. We've both attended the conference a few times past now. Can't wait for this one. I especially am excited. Here's a little shout out that I'll be doing a talk about cultural appropriation, which really is an ongoing conversation that Naz and I have had for about a year. So it'll be great to present it to other people, hopefully in a digestible 20-minute talk.
Yeah, I'm really excited about your talk. I think part of it is that people hear cultural appropriation, and it's not like I knew what cultural, just because I'm a person of color, it doesn't mean that I really quite understood what cultural appropriation was until I dug into it and I saw it apply to my own culture. But I think that there is this thing about cultural appropriation that intimidates a lot of people, and I'm excited for your talk to kind of explain what it is and why it's important and why we're having this dialogue right now at this moment in society, in our society.
Kim, what do you hope people will take away from your talk most?
I think we'll obviously talk about how we got here. Egregious examples of non-Vietnamese chefs telling people how to eat pho correctly, or rather, let's say food media framing it so that it is a non-Vietnamese chef telling everybody the correct way to eat pho, or how suddenly turmeric is everywhere, whether in a latte or in a tonic or baked into something, but a lot of people don't know actually originally where it comes from, cultural connections. They don't know that Gwyneth Paltrow didn't invent Ayurveda. Actually, I think most people should know Gwyneth Paltrow didn't invent Ayurveda, but okay, I'm just testing my jokes on you right now before I have to do well, this.
I think we have an unfair advantage because we love you and we think you're fun. So, but test
and
away.
And still we didn't laugh.
You did. We gave a chuckle, I think.
But I think, okay, whoa. But
that's
I think
exactly
a lot of,
what it's going to be
I
like
think a,
bitten.
A lot of it will be talking about the how and what, examples, doing a lot of some intro and exposition, but mostly a lot of concrete strategy and a lot of talking about what we can do to elevate POC and immigrant-owned businesses and celebrate folks making their own food, and making reframing the conversation so it's not just reacting about cultural appropriation, but talking about sovereignty.
Well, Bitten is also all about solutions and not the problems. I've been to a lot of events that highlight problems and don't really talk about the solutions, and I think it's solutions that are inspiring. So what are the people on stage doing to change things? That is what always makes me motivated and makes me happy to go out and do things.
What other talks are you excited about?
Oh,
I know
goodness,
there's
so many.
People are talking about everything from food design to the poetry of bees, which we'd love to hear more about that.
Oh, I'm so excited about the poetry of bees. It's this really incredible artist named Charles Wilkin, whom I've known for many years. And he and his husband moved upstate about a decade ago. And I think just for fun, he got a beehive and started sort of cultivating that. I'm working with that. And I'm going to not tell you guys what he's going to talk about exactly, but I'll just tell you that I had goosebumps when I was on a call with him. And for months afterwards, I couldn't stop thinking about what he told me about bees and colony collapse and what he's doing with his bees and the lessons the bees have taught him. It was so beautiful and so incredibly magical.
Okay, well, just give us one more taste. Like, what's one other talk that you're and maybe
I'll give you two. Yeah. Okay, I'll give you a couple
and maybe just let our listeners know kind of what the format of Bitten is and so they can understand, because I think the format's unique in some ways and it would be great for everyone to understand kind of what they're going to be treated to.
So Bitten is a lot like TED Talks. All of our speakers give keynote addresses and the audience sits and listens and watches. This year we're doing a few extra things. We always serve breakfast and lunch, and I'm really excited to announce our breakfast and lunch partner this year very soon. We also this year are trying to do an ice cream social and pizza party at the end of Bitten so people can get to know each other and
awesome.
Hang out and get down. Yeah,
we know a thing or two about ice cream parties.
And then
also pizza.
True. Yeah. We've given both of those parties.
We're watching
before.
Other people eat pizza while we,
we
do this
are.
Right now.
And then this year we're doing something new, which we've never done before. Everybody always wants to ask questions from our speakers, but we've never had a Q&A forum. This year we're taking a few of the speakers, giving them 5 extra minutes, and we're going to ask our audience to tweet questions just in the interest of time, and we're going to have someone go on stage and then have a conversation with the speaker based on what the audience wanted to know, which I'm really, really excited about. A couple of other talks that we have is I have to plug my Iranians. We have Andy Varaghani, who is an editor at Bon Appetit, is going to come and tell a beautiful story about how he kind of was embarrassed by and shunned his Iranian culture as an Iranian child in the U.S. And it sort of took a story that he did, that he was a part of at Savor, and where they needed help with the recipes and nobody could get them right. And he ended up using his mom's recipes for him to reconnect with that and really embrace that. And it's so beautiful, and I'm really excited about. We also have Brian Bordanik, who was the CEO of Dinner Lab. It was a company that I believe was valued at $100 million at one point and had events all over the country in over 30 cities. And almost overnight, they went from $10 million in funding to closing their doors. So he's going to come and talk about failure and raising from the ashes. And I'm very excited about that.
I think that's great, because I think it's really... really important to talk about things that haven't worked and why, and what lessons we can learn from that. And I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in terms of people's success and understanding all the stumbling blocks that, you know, they had to fall through before they were able to reach success. And so I'm really glad you're bringing that to the Bitten audience. And if you're not able to attend Bitten, you usually video the talks.
Yeah, we usually do. This year, we may not be able to. We're trying, so we'll see. So I hope people attend. We have actually early bird tickets until Friday, so you can go on our website and get those early bird tickets.
Okay, this is bitten.com.
Yeah, proud that you are repping the Iranian contingent as well.
Yeah, last year we had Homa Dashtaki from White Mustache Yogurt. She did two Bittens last year, one in New York and one in L.A. She came on her honeymoon to the one in L.A.
Oh, my gosh. I will resist making a funny biting joke, but she got bitten. Okay, I just went for it.
That's cute. Yeah. I like that.
Okay.
And this year we're going to have some of her products also. We're going to have, she has these amazing whey popsicles, so we're going to have those at the conference, and we're going to have the whey drinks. It's very exciting.
Those popsicles are really delicious.
Yeah. So as someone who's kind of on the forefront of trends and trend forecasting and working with a lot of other brands in the food space, what I want to talk about a little bit is, why do you think there is so much attention surrounding food? It seems as if we are in a place where food is really getting an incredible amount of attention from all angles. Why do you think that is?
Oh, man, there are so many reasons, and it's really the convergence of all of these individual things that are happening in culture that's making it that way. Very simply put, food affects every single person on the planet, whether it's access to food or wanting to go to the hottest new restaurant. Everyone eats. And because of social media, as we know, everyone takes a photo of what they eat. And so I think that's had a tremendous effect in elevating food as a pillar of pop culture, to the point where we used to identify ourselves by what we wore and what music we listened to. And now food has replaced that. And we really show people who we are by talking about where we eat and what we eat and whose food we eat and what ingredients we use and what salad we make. And so I think the fact that you don't have to be high fashion to be into food the way that you had to be into fashion, that it's accessible in a lot of ways that other things weren't necessarily, and that you don't get judged really for almost anything that you eat, whereas you might get judged for something that you wear or music that you, or band that you listen to that might not be very cool, has helped a larger group of people be interested in food in this new way and think about it in this new way.
So it kind of sounds like you think this is a good thing.
What's a good thing?
This 100% increased interest in food.
Yeah, I mean, I think fetishizing anything is not a good thing. I think being obsessed with anything is not a good thing. I think that, what I like about food is that food can be high art, and it can be a $6 or $7 veggie burger at Superiority Burger. That's really wonderful, right? So it has this. I know it's like my favorite restaurant.
I love Superiority Burger.
Amanda took me for my first Superiority Burger.
It's so good. We are all obsessed with Superiority Burger.
I love the burger. Anyway, I could talk about it for a while.
Yeah. So I think that broad range is really, really interesting and really incredibly important. But I think that, obviously food also affects our economy. It affects our environment. And I'm hoping that the good side of this awareness and interest in food is that it'll inspire more people to think about those other sides of food. The New York Times just did a really wonderful piece about how a lot of developing countries are suffering from a lot of medical conditions because of the overabundance of fast food, essentially, and candy and packaged food that American consumers aren't eating as much of anymore.
Processed food.
Processed foods. Thank you. Yeah.
The in, I mean, they did this was in the Nestle article.
Yeah. And so I think that awareness is really interesting. At the same time, I think it's going to put pressure on big brands. A lot of big brands right now are buying up food startups, and they, you know, in an attempt to help revive them. And I think that that's a short-term strategy. But if you haven't changed your brand at the core, you're going to consume that startup, and that startup is going to take on your culture, and you're not going to take on that startup's culture and that startup's values. So I think that the hard work of being a company that's going to be profitable in the next or 20 years starts with sacrificing a little bit of profits right now and really changing the core offering and the core value of your brand.
Well, we've talked about this, right? Where some of the, let's say, character traits of saying caring about good, healthy food, caring about access for all, caring about even, you know, giving back, you know, companies that give a certain percentage back to charity or something like that. A lot of people say, or, you know, saying or emphasizing true diversity in the workplace. Some folks say, we'll get to that once we make profit. But the thing is, if you don't build this in fundamentally at the beginning, it becomes much harder, especially once you get really big, to do that later.
Yeah.
And I think this is an ongoing conversation.
Definitely. Are there any brands that are doing that well now? Do either of you think that there are, or someone that
I think
can, like, look to
I
that have, model?
Yeah, I really, and Indra Nooyi, I think, is the CEO of Pepsi. I butchered her name, I think.
Yeah,
I
it really, is Indra Nooyi.
Okay, I really admire her leadership and what she's done at Pepsi. Mm. She is, first of all, a woman of color. She's a woman CEO of a huge company, and she went in and she said, we have to take a lot of processed ingredients out of our foods. We have to take a lot of sugar out of our foods. And she was met with a lot of resistance from the board because in the short term, it meant decreased profits. It's not a company that's done it overnight or has been perfect by any means. But the things that she's doing and striving for are making a significant difference. And she was very bold and brave. And we have to remember that she didn't start doing this last year or 2 years ago when it became super hip. I think it was maybe 7-8 years ago when she started at Pepsi, and these were her initiatives that she sort of launched.
There's a really great profile of her in the New Yorker from maybe 4 years ago now.
Oh yeah,
which
I
would
read
be really
that.
Good mm-hmm. to compare, like, what Pepsi has gone through over the last few years since then.
Totally.
I'm really curious to see how Blue Bottle is going to continue to grow now that it's part of.
Well, and Stumptown is part of a much bigger, and so is Intelligentsia, and I think Le Colombe is, well, I think, one of the only bigger coffee chains that's still pretty independent.
Mm.
Wow. Yeah. I was pretty shocked by the Blue Bottle. I mean, not really shocked, but I had pictured them as kind of a company that, or that I had read about them as a company that really, really, like, took such extreme measures about how they serve their product and where they serve it and their training that goes along with it. So I think it really will be interesting, you know, down the road to see how they're able, if and how they're able to retain that level of quality. Yeah. And we'll have to visit our neighborhood Blue Bottle right here in Bushwick.
I was officially trained there.
Oh, wow.
Surprise. I'm a Blue Bottle trained barista.
Why have you never made me coffee before?
Wait, are you a barista also? You do all of these random things.
I'm a moonlighting barista.
Because I was trained by Counterculture when I was opening my very good friend Marissa's cafe and Nourish Kitchen and Table in the West Village. And it was really hard. It was the hardest part for me, little aside here, and then we probably have to wrap things up, was it was hard. The Counterculture training wanted you to watch your espresso shot, so it wasn't automatically timed. You had to stop your shot based on the look of the shot, but steam your milk, simultaneously. And steaming the milk was so difficult because it's a very fine touch. Like, you actually don't want to get it that hot. And I think many, I don't want to start a barista controversy, but some in the barista world feel as if drinks with milk are served too hot in the U.S. So it's a very controversial topic, which I don't want to dive too deep into today.
I was trained at Starbucks.
Oh.
When they had espresso machines.
Oh my gosh, you guys, we have
three baristas
who have fallen and off this right here in the studio.
Yeah, this was in like 1996 in Seattle.
Wow.
I worked there for 4 years. I was a shift supervisor.
Whoa.
That's another amazing company that's incredible. I had health insurance and I got stock benefits as a 17-year-old working for part-time for Starbucks.
You still got that stuff.
And they have frappuccinos then?
Yeah. And oh, you know did. What okay. we used to do? We hated making frappuccinos, my like colleagues and I. So we would walk around talking about how much fat and calories frappuccinos had really loudly, hoping customers would not order them.
I like this strategy. This sounds like something characteristic of the Nas I know now.
Totally.
Makes me really appreciate this story.
I think you need to add this to like your short bio about yourself. Like, Nasriahi, founder of Bitten,
Starbucks barista.
Starbucks barista discouraging frappuccinos since 1996.
Yeah.
Let's write it up and put it on there right now. Well, I is it safe to say that there will not be frappuccinos at Bitten?
There will not. I actually was going to have someone from Starbucks speak this year, and I had to drop out last minute. So we were going to have Starbucks at Bitten, but we aren't going to now.
Well, we can't wait for you to announce who your food and beverage partners are going to be. So, folks, if you sign up for the newsletter, you'll be the first to know.
Do it.
Yeah, and if you open our Food Book Fair newsletter today, there's also links to more information about Bitten. So please sign up for Bitten's newsletter and definitely keep listening to recommended reading with Food Book Fair. Signing off. Thank you so much, Nasriahi, for joining us today. We can't wait to consume everything about Bitten.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been delightful.
And I'll throw it over to Kim to give her own outro. And
I feel the same. I just now need to, once I get off the radio, write that damn talk. JK, it's done. It's done. It's done.
Thanks for listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair, and we will catch you all next time.
2 p.m. on Tuesdays, every Tuesdays on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Recommended Reading is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.